both of these expressions, the psychology of passion and motivation and the psychology of orientations, come from Eric Logan in the final chapter of The New Science of Politics. After pointing out that most modern psychologies are, for all practical purposes, psychologies simply of passion and motivation, and that they reduce the human person to simply the compound of body and sensitive psyche. He goes on and simply calls for the development of what he calls the psychology of orientations. The psychology of orientations would not dispense with the insights of the behaviorists and the associationists and the Freudians and so on and so forth, but would move them into a context in which there would also be discussed the participation of the sensitive psyche in the orientation of the human spirit toward meaning, truth, the good, and the divine. In other words, there are definite insights into human psychology that you find in the psychologies of passion and motivation. It's the exclusivity of those psychologies that is the difficulty. And those insights need to be moved into a more embracing context that discusses as well the participation of our inner sensitivity in the orientations of the human spirit toward meaning and truth and the good and God. Now, it's that kind of psychology that I'm attempting to indicate the beginnings of in this course, giving you as much as I can of moving in that direction. And when I say that, for instance, authentic psychotherapy involves the healing of sensitive spontaneity so that they can participate in those self-transcendent orientations of the human spirit, what I'm doing there is I'm trying to begin to carry out the kind of call that Logan issues for a psychology of orientations rather than purely passional motivation. And I would want to go this far. I would want to say that a basic clarification of the operations of the human spirit is the essential beginning for an adequate science of the human psyche. You have to start with articulating the operations of the human spirit. This is why I began our course with articulating the creative vector. You must begin there. That is what makes a human being well, is the performance in a relatively unobstructed fashion of those operations. Those of you who are reading Subject and Psyche, you know that in the first chapter I insist strongly that to write a psychology, you have to begin with the kind of understanding of the human subject that you find, for example, in the work of Lonergan as he works out those levels of consciousness. That orientation is an essential grounding for a true human psychology. Number D, the constitution of the person. As I said, the psychologies of passional motivation will reduce the human person to the dual constitution of body and sensitive psyche. What I want to develop in contrast to that is a notion of the human person whereby we are a threefold compound, is a distinct dimensions now that, again, they're not separate, they're distinct dimensions that have to be talked about in distinction before we can appropriately talk about the way they work together. Body, sensitive psyche, and spirit or intentionality. Three.
Just a little bit of a one. It has to do with your opponent, shall we say, the people over on that side of the board. Obviously, they do not deny the activities that they would probably, in a non-Lagrangian fashion, lump under intelligence. Mm-hmm. How would you comment, then, on working intelligence as an activity into that?
Okay.
An
example of what some of these people might want to do with intelligence is found in a paper of Freud's, a Project for Scientific Psychology, in 1895, where he puts forward the goal, which he never denied, down to his death when he was 39, although he never fulfilled it, also, either, to understand intelligence. Terms of the quantification of energy. This is the goal, the explicit goal of at least some of these people. It hasn't been achieved. It has not been achieved yet. But it's what a number of them would like to be able to do. Then a number of them at least would say, those who are most explicit about where they're coming from methodologically, would say that once we've reached this point, then we have a real science of intelligence. Okay. Now, that is not where I would stand at all. Freud, in fact, never even dealt with feeling in terms of the quantification. Why? Because I don't think those are the appropriate categories, even for dealing with feeling. And in fact, Freud did give a psychological, and not a mechanistic, interpretation. In other words, he dealt with it as an experience. And that's scientific when you're dealing with feeling. That's scientific. You're getting at the reality. You're dealing with the phenomenon in an explanatory fashion. See what I'm getting? So at least some of those people would want to reduce intelligence to quantification of energy. He's very, very clear on this in his Project for Scientific Psychology in 1895. It's something that he wants to do. And they believe, because of where they're coming from in terms of scientific methodology, that they have not reached a scientific understanding of intelligence until they have done that. See? I just think that that's a faulty assumption. And I just think even the affective, which is a matter of energy, was never dealt with by Freud quantitatively. And I don't think it would be at all relevant to an understanding of our experience, even if you did deal with feeling quantitatively. It could probably possibly can be done. But what's it going to do to heal the person? You know, if I can give an equation for the feeling that I have right now, it's not going to do anything to heal me. But is there a science of healing? Yes, there is. Okay. But that science of healing is not mathematical physics. Psychology, and it deals with the experience as it is experienced.
Well, that's certainly the awfulest of far end. Okay.
Yeah. And you know, I think it helps to use that as an example to indicate a tendency. Not everybody's on that end of the spectrum, you know, that far end of the spectrum, but it's a tendency that's present. All right. So, in my interpretation then, I want to say that we are a triple compound of the bodily organism, the sensitive psyche, and intentionality, those operations, which I believe, I think it's more than a belief, certainly in the philosophical tradition, which I basically would say is my own, but intentionality is ontologically grounded in a spiritual principle within the human person. Even Becker's book, The Denial of Death, which I've drawn upon quite a bit, bogs down in a radical dualism. For Becker, all of consciousness... Now, a number of you I know are reading the book, so I want to talk about this. For Becker, consciousness, all of consciousness, which he calls the self, is a unitary dimension of the human person. You see, for me, consciousness is twofold. For me, consciousness is psychic and intentional. And those, the distinction needs to be drawn there. For Becker, all of this is lumped into one thing, which he calls the self. Now notice, one of the implications of this is that the body is left outside of the self. There is an alienation that remains throughout his book of self from body. There is an inescapable, ineradicable, final alienation in the human condition. And he states it quite clearly. You'll never be able to get beyond that. We are hopelessly dual beings. Consciousness and body. An ultimate, ineradicable duality. Always in conflict with one another. Now, for me, the self is all three dimensions, constituted by those three dimensions. The body is a dimension of the self. And consciousness is twofold, psyche and spirit. But the self is threefold, body, psyche, spirit. Is that much clear? Now, what kind of difference does this make? Well, one of the differences is, you know, that if conceptually you leave the body outside the self, there will remain that internal alienation of your self-consciousness from the body. It remains. Theory has an impact on, you know, a theory about the human person has an impact about on how the human person thinks about himself or herself. And if your theory of the human person is that the body is alienated from the self, that's going to have an impact on the way in which you relate to your own bodily being. Okay, let me take each one of these dimensions, the bodily organism, the psyche, and intentionality, and talk about each one of them. And then we'll talk about how they operate together, and particularly what the role of the psyche is in the total constitution of the human person. Number one, the bodily organism. The bodily organism is, some of this may sound awfully obvious, but it's a system of physical, chemical, and biological manifolds of energy. A system. Physical, chemical, biological manifolds of energy. And the functioning of that energy is recurrent . Monergan talks of schemes of recurrence. It's a recurrent functioning. And the functioning of that energy remains unconscious unless it is disturbed, unless the schemes are interrupted. If you're having a heart attack, your cardiovascular system becomes conscious. It erupts into consciousness. Before that point, it remains unconscious. You're not aware, or if it's conscious, it's on the fringes. Very much in the dark. But when it's disturbed, it breaks into consciousness. But it's a system, a regularly recurrent system. Over the same thing over and over and over again. A scheme of recurrence. You know, if A happens, B happens. If B happens, C happens. If C happens, D happens. If D happens, A happens. And it starts all over again. Now, the only time that will break into consciousness is if, let's say, C doesn't happen. Then A doesn't happen. It doesn't start all over again. Something's upset. Interrupted. Scheme. So various elements that enter into these different schemes of recurrence would be the circulation of blood, the nervous system, the respiratory system. I'm not a physiologist or an anatomist, so, you know, relationships among all of these things, I'm not going to attempt to say anything about them. But these would be different dimensions to the system of the bodily organs. Okay, the sensitive psyche, number two. In both animals and human beings, there is a surplus of energy beyond what is needed for merely organic functioning. A surplus of energy beyond what is needed for merely physical, chemical, biological functioning. That surplus is not present in the purely vegetative order of existence, as far as we know, anyway. Probably no way of ever finding out whether it is or not, but it is present in the animal and in the human being. Surplus of energy beyond what is needed simply to fulfill the organic functioning of the animal or the human being. And it's that surplus of energy that functions in the production of conscious experience. That surplus of energy is psychic. It produces experiences that are not simply biological, but also, in addition to being biological and being thoroughly biological in their base, they are also psychological, conscious. And these experiences, these activities, these states are not adequately understood only by understanding the laws of physics, chemistry, and botany, biochemistry, and all of the different bio this and bio that that we're developing, neurophysiology and so on. For example, to give a very simple example, the act of seeing is not understood as an act of seeing by physics, chemistry, or biology. It's understood as an act of seeing by psychology. Physics, chemistry, and biology will explain the bodily base of the act of seeing, but the experience of seeing is a psychological reality that is understood by the science of psychology. And not by physics, not by chemistry, not by biology, botany, biochemistry, biophysics, or any of those things. They are all important in terms of understanding the bodily and neural base, the brain, the nervous system, the organs, and so on that are involved. But they don't grasp the act of seeing as it is an experienced act on the part of the human being. The emotions of the animal, let me just give another example. The emotions of the animal or of the human being, also, they also depend upon underlying neural realities that are understood by neurophysiology, for instance. But as conscious emotions, they're not understood by neurophysiology, but by the science of psychology, a science that understands conscious emotion, that takes conscious emotion as its explicit object. So this, the psyche is that sensitive stream of consciousness. Sensations, memories, images, emotions, strivings, associations, spontaneous responses, and so on and so forth, that are understood by a science that focuses on those realities as experienced events. John?
Talk about the sense of the psyche as a surplus of energy. Can you use that kind of a term, or I don't know how far off I am to say, call it an image. Or a surplus of energy, but to use that sounds to me, certainly sounds to me like you're opening the door to a reduction back to a la Freud, back to the quantification of energy of intelligence, is seeing everything in terms of energy.
Okay, now first...
Why choose that kind of an expression? Is to maintain that tie of the self, or is it just to legitimize psychology in the eyes of the rest of the sciences?
No. I think it's... first of all, I haven't gotten to this yet at all. Okay? All right. Now, but I'm talking about the sensitive psyche, which I think is tied to the bodily base. And the bodily base provides all the material for sensitive psychic experience. Now, to talk of it in terms of the quantification of energy is not impossible. To talk of these things that I just mentioned here, you see, sensation, emotion, and so on, in terms of the quantification of energy, is probably not impossible to do. It probably can be done and possibly will be done. Now, how much, the question remains, how much help that gives for understanding the psyche as a dimension of the human person? That question still remains, you see. It's up for understanding it as a dimension of the human person. Lonergan's point on this is that when you're dealing with chemistry and physics, in his terminology, the relevant heuristic notion, in other words, what do you want to understand, is a function, an indeterminate function which you're trying to determine and which you will express in, mathematical terms when you get to the understanding. That's your relevant heuristic notion. And that gives you the explanatory understanding of physical and chemical reality. Okay? When you get into the dimension of life, and then even more so as you come to animal and human level, your relevant heuristic notion changes, and it becomes development. The relevant heuristic notion for understanding plants, animals, and human beings is development. And as you move further in this, from vegetative to psychological to intentional reality, quantitative categories become less and less relevant to understanding the reality that you're dealing with. Less and less relevant. In this case, understanding the reality of the human person. Does that help?
Yeah, I think that's where you're going.
Okay. All right, intention.